Welcome back, baseball fans, to episode, 13 of the Joshua Kuznick Experience. I'm your host, Ryan Sullivan, editor-in-chief of NatsGM.com and the Baron of All Baseball Podcasts. And MLB-certified agent, or I'm joined with MLB-certified agent and the man the show is named after, Joshua Kuznick. Josh, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, although that was probably the worst intro I could have ever done, but nonetheless, so we'll dive in and get started this week. So I'm glad to get you back. It's been a little while since we've recorded, and actually it's been a little while since I've talked to you. How are things?
Good. Busy. Just lots of stuff going on right now in my orbit.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've got we're recording this a couple days before the Futures game and the MLB All-Star break. I guess you're going out to the Futures game this year?
Yeah, I get to go again this year, which is always fun. Carlos Asuaje made it, so it's one of the events I'm fortunate enough to get to go to. And then if he doesn't get called up after the game, I'll be going to the AAA All-Star game in North Carolina 4 days later.
Oh, nice. Just back right across the country. No problem.
Yeah, no kidding.
Now, are those events, from your perspective as kind of an agent, what are you doing? Kind of what are you shaking hands with Carlos? Are you being seen? What are you doing, during the game time and around that, out there?
Watching Carlos play first and foremost, just being there, being seen, talking to various, club officials for stuff I'd like to get, taken care of in person. So there's always a work reason to go. And then the Players Association party is one of the nights that I always go to. And I think I'm going to the Baseball America event that they're doing the night before. But, yeah, it's, not really the winter meetings, but everyone's still in one place. So anytime you have an opportunity for everyone in the industry to be in one place, probably a good idea to go.
And what's it like, if you can kind of give us a little insight into what it's like for Carlos? I mean, he's having another phenomenal season. It looks like you say, he could get called up any day. I mean, is this kind of like graduate school? Is this exciting for him, or what is this kind of for him?
I think it's great. He's having a great year. I'm not surprised. He's very underrated still, I think. People are selling him a little bit short, but it's just interesting. The Padres have the lowest OPS in the majors for second baseman, and Carlos is in AAA, so I don't know if it's more of a business move where they'd like him to play in front of the home crowd in the Futures game. Maybe it's that, and then he gets called up afterwards. That'd be awesome. But maybe they want him to keep working on stuff. Who knows? But they're well past the Super 2 cutoff, and he could be up any day now, and that'd be great.
Yeah, I mean, San Diego, not trying to pound on their team, but they're not having the best season right now. They could look to make a couple deals here towards the trade deadline. Like you say, there could really be an opportunity for Asuaje to shoot. He could be in the majors tomorrow kind of thing.
Yeah, he's on. He's not on the 40-man, and it's his 40-man year, so we all know he's going to go on the roster at the end of the season. So if they figure they're going to put him on the roster at the end of the year, maybe they go ahead and say, let's just do it now, and that happens.
Yeah, and I don't know if you can answer this, but why do you think he is still a little underrated? Because I thought he would start getting some hype when he was, a pretty big part of the Kimbrel trade back in, November, December. I thought then some people might get familiar with him, and then, he's just continued hitting. I feel like you say, there aren't a lot of guys that are batting .320 in the minor leagues in the middle infield. I mean, why is he not getting more love?
Maybe it's because he went to a D2. Maybe it's because he was older. But he's 24. He was considered the last guy in that deal ceiling wise, which I thought was crazy. And I don't know. It's strange. I figured with Boston, his profile would have been raised a lot more heavily, but really never happened that much. Maybe it's because he wasn't there long enough. But I don't know. It's surprising that he doesn't get more recognition for the stuff he does, because the guy just flat out rakes and plays a somewhat premium position. So the people that have him penciled in as a bench player, I mean, I think that's his floor. And I do think he's going to be an everyday player at some point.
I mean, I think we're just starting to overlook too much in the game that you got to be able to hit. And this kid can flat out hit. I mean, he can put the bat to the baseball, and I think we've started somehow overlooking that skill in definitely at the major league level.
Yeah, it's really the main thing I look for. I mean, athleticism is great, but can't hit, you can't hit. Reggie Abercrombie might be the most athletic player I've ever seen in my life, and I think he, you know, hit 200 for his career despite having 80 raw grade power. And, you know, again, that's great. You know, for every Lorenzo Cain, there's a million Reggie Abercrombies.
Yeah, but it's just it blows me away when you see guys that get, I don't know, the tools thing just, it gets me. And that maybe that's a good segue for kind of talking about the MLB draft that just went by, I don't know, a few weeks ago now that we're recording. But how'd you do in the Major League draft? I know you had, I really want to get to the Ken Rosenthal story on one of your guys as well.
It was good. Alex DeTeo went to the Marlins in the 19th round. He was the Nova D2, the one starter for Nova, the D2 school that Aslaje went to, and Justin Garcia and JD Martinez and Michael Fire. So just cool to have another guy from Nova, really good dude. And then Reggie McClain from Missouri went in the 13th round to Seattle, which I was really happy about. And Tim Lynch went to the Yankees in the 9th round, and that was also quite exciting.
Yeah, I think Tim Lynch is the guy that had the story written about him. Ken Rosenthal wrote about how he's a big-time autograph collector, which I know is something you and I both share as well. How did you get hooked up with him? And kind of, I'd love for you to tell that story a little bit.
Sure. I met Tim when he was a teenager at Roger Dean Stadium. I was just becoming a full-time agent right after college, and Tim was one of the regular autograph collectors. There was a group of about four or five kids. They were there every game. I think they were season ticket holders. And, I mean, I meet hundreds of kids on the road, you know, with their parents every year, and I always kind of jokingly say, if they ever need an agent, you know, just give me a call or find me. And, you know, I stayed in touch with Tim over the years whenever I saw him at the field, but I never really spoke to him away from the field. So I maybe saw him twice in 7 years. And last year's draft, right after right before the signing deadline, he called or messaged me on Facebook to set up a call, and he really was like, hey, hope you're doing well. I'm playing at Southern Miss. You know, the Dodgers made me an offer. What do you think I should do? And I was like, wait a minute, you play baseball? And, you know, it was a good offer. I mean, I thought, you know, it would have been – it was not high enough that, you know, he wanted to give up graduating on time, but – I mean, it was a really good offer, and, you know, he really decided he'd rather finish out his time in school, and he went from going undrafted his junior year to the 9th round his senior year, and I mean, right now he's hitting .333 in short season, and I'm kind of hoping he gets to low A by the end of the year.
That's unbelievable. I mean, what a story.
Yeah, it's crazy. And then a couple of days before the draft this year, he messaged me and said, hey, you know, you're still my advisor, right? And I'm like, sure. You know, I didn't do anything, and you know, I maybe called a couple scouts, and, you know, draft day rolls around and goes on day two, set up the story with Ken, which wasn't really even a setup. I just, you know, I told Ken, like, and I told Jonathan Mayo and a couple other people how I met this kid. And then Ken was the one who thought it'd be a great story. And this thing kind of went viral. It was cool for Ken.
Yeah, it was crazy. All of a sudden I'm looking at this, you know, I'm looking at my Twitter and I see Ken Rosenthal writing about this guy. And I'm like, wait a minute. That's Kuznick's guy. I'm like, what's going on? Wait a minute. Like, it was such a world's colliding moment.
Yeah, I told Ken about the story, just not thinking it was a story. And he thought he wanted to write about it. He called Lorenzo Cain. He emailed A-Rod. I mean, it was nuts.
That's unbelievable. Now, who is his – how is his autograph collection?
Tim's is great. I mean, from what I understand, he's got about – similar to what I have, 25,000 signed cards, and
oh my gosh.
You know, I was joking with one of the writers, you know, that, you know, for every 100 Miguel Cabreras Tim and I have, we also have, you know, 500 Jim Cavoriuses, and it's like, you know, it's a lot of volume.
That is hilarious.
I legitimately have, I think, 500 signed cards of Jay Bomeister from the Panthers, who's with the Blues now. Like, I legit have 500 signed cards of him, and it's like, well, I mean, he's a good player. What the hell do I do with these?
Right. He's a defenseman, right? I remember, like, first overall pick?
Yeah, he went first overall. He went third. He still went number one. But, yeah, he's playing for St. Louis, and about 500 cards signed by him. I think I have about 500 of Roberto Luongo from over the years. I mean, legit. I mean, I would get hundreds per year of each guy. I mean, the only visiting player I think I have hundreds of is when I was doing hockey heavily when I was a kid. I think I have a 375 card signed by Brett Hull.
Wow. That's at least a good player. I mean, that's a hell of a player, yeah.
Yeah, I was terrible when I was a collector. It was when I was a teenager, I was the guy that would go to minor league games and just hand a guy literally 500 cards, and they would just sit there and talk to me pregame in the bullpen signing them. But what was interesting is it's, I think where I really learned a lot of practical knowledge of becoming an agent, because I would ask those guys, I mean, I would grill them when I was 15, 16 years old, how'd you pick your agent? What the hell does an agent do? And the more cards I had, the longer amount of time I could spend with the players, and it really kind of helped me out a lot.
What's the best autograph in your collection? What's your favorite?
Well,
it's got to be Cobain, right? It's got to be.
Yeah, my Kurt Cobain autographs are pretty awesome. I mean, I have Elliott Smith, Jeff Buckley, Greg Giraldo, Mitch Hedberg, and then if you want to go historical, I mean, I have Yuri Gagarin, Alexander Cartwright, Cy Young.
Cy Young, wow.
Yeah, Ty Cobb, Rogers Hornsby, Jimmy Fox. I have stuff signed by all those guys.
How'd you get that stuff?
Years of collecting with my father.
Wow. Good Lord.
I mean, I've got type letters my grandmother gave me signed by FDR, Teddy Roosevelt, and Michael Faraday, the guy who invented the battery and, like, all these other scientific theorems. And I like the historical stuff quite a bit. I don't know if you saw it on Twitter. I had some downtime traveling recently, and I literally sent out 100 letters to politicians to see if I get some political autographs again. Because I have Madeleine Albright, John McCain, you know, any politician I would always try to collect if I had any time. And I just sent out 100 letters. And this is actually a funny story. I posted it on Twitter yesterday. I got back. I had mailed Barack Obama a 2008 Topps card, and presidents, it's very hard to get their autographs. It never happens. And I sent it to a venue where he was speaking instead of the White House, because the White House is an automatic no. And I got the card back, and it's like, oh, it's unsigned, whatever. And I leave it on my counter overnight, and I knocked over the pile of cards that it was on. And I looked on the back of the card, and it was signed in pen. I was like, oh, wow, I almost missed that.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, so I have a 2008 Topps card signed by Barack Obama now. I'm pretty happy about this.
That's crazy. Was it his card, or was it just a random card?
No, it's his card. They made, like, a 2008 election set, Topps. They had Kucinich, McCain, Bill Richardson, Palin, Biden, and I think I have all of them signed except for Biden.
Really? I would think that would be the easiest guy to get, too. Huh.
Yeah, I mean, the easiest autograph that somebody could go in business with is Sarah Palin. Is, I think, baseball signed by herself for about $100 each on eBay, and she literally signs all of her mail.
Weird. I would actually think she would be a tough autograph.
Yeah, it's the easiest autograph to get. She signs it all herself. You know, she's very nice about it. I may not agree with her politically, but she does all of her mail. And I did a horrible, horrible trick to her, like, I think 5-6 years ago when I wrote to her when she first came on the scene. There was a company called Wild Card that used to make, like, the Stripe cards. Brett Favre's rookie in it. Rookie card is in it. And they used to have, like, these stripes that said 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 5, 50, 100, and 1,000. And if you got the 1,000, you'd mail in the card and then get back 1,000 Brett Favre cards or 1,000 of whoever you got. So that company made a political set in 1991, you know, that had all these different politicians. And they had like issues cards, and one of them was a pro-abortion card, one of them was an anti-abortion card, and I sent them both to Sarah Palin to see if she would sign both of them, and she signed the anti-abortion card but did not sign the pro-choice card.
That's awesome. That's funny.
I'm like, wow, she caught it. Damn it.
That is really right. Like, I'm just assuming she signed, you know, if she's actually doing it, like, you just, you know, wrap it off, you know, like an assembly line, just boom, 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 you know, knock
them
off.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I'm like, this would be weird if I got this signed, and came back unsigned. It was the only one. I'm like, wow, she totally caught it.
That'd be a hell of a funny thing to have, too, if you just had that card.
I would have died if that came back signed. That would be all over Twitter.
That would be I kind of give her props, and I'm kind of bummed that she caught it, you know?
I'm bummed she caught it, but I do have a pro-life card signed by her, which is not surprising.
That has to be posted on Twitter. We need to see that.
I'd be happy to post it. I can't believe she signed that.
That's really funny.
Yeah, the only presidential autograph, right before my wedding, we got signed photos back, my wife and I, from George W. Bush, George H.W. Bush, Barbara Bush, and Jimmy Carter. They all signed and personalized photos for our wedding for us. I mean, they're not auto pens, fortunately, but we never got anything back from Bill and Hillary or Obama at the time. And the only presidential autograph I ever got myself, this is a true story, I was 12, and then Governor Bill Clinton was speaking to my synagogue, and I got one of the campaign posters, you know, that said Clinton 92. This is before he picked Al Gore for his running mate, and it says Clinton 92, and I actually took my grandmother's blue ballpoint pen, ran up to the security handed it to him, and he signed it for me.
That's awesome. I haven't heard that
story.
Yeah,
no, it was awesome. Looking back, it's awesome seeing Bill Clinton in a tallis and a yarmulke.
That's an image for you, right? There's an image.
I vividly remember that day. All I cared about was getting his autograph. I was 10.
Right. That is so funny. Oh, my gosh.
But I did. I got Bill Clinton's autograph. It's framed. It's awesome. And I've had it for, you know, 24 years now.
Now, did you tell me this, or did somebody else tell me the story that when you got married, you invited a bunch of celebrities to your wedding just so they would send gifts and pictures?
Yeah, Peyton Manning. I mean, we just invited a ton of people. And, well, I mean, some of them, like Brantley showed up, Butcher Gross couldn't make it. So, like, because I work in sports, there were, you know, a few.
Right.
But no, we sent out a few of them, and, you know, they all said no. But they all had, like, Peyton Manning signed something for us, like, a bunch of people signed something for us. That was some respite of fun for me when, you know, dealing with the planning for the wedding process, which is not at all fun.
Yeah. Note to the audience, that is a great way to try to make a wedding planning or wedding adventure fun, because otherwise for the guys, it's not at all. So that's a good move.
Except for like the cake tasting, it was just like, I don't care what the drapes look like. I don't care.
Yeah, somebody's going to take pictures. Great. I don't need to see what pictures you've taken in the past of other people getting married. Yeah.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Right.
The wedding was fun, though. My wedding was awesome.
Yeah, I had a surprisingly good time as well at mine. So, anyways, who else do we got to talk about? I got to. All right, Seth Lugo. We got to talk about him.
Jacob Seth, yes. He got called up for the first time. The Mets had a series of setbacks, and Mats and Syndergaard both had bone spurs, I believe, and the AAA guys ahead of them, Anoa and one other guy, were both injured or had just pitched, so they had to call up Seth for, like, an emergency role. So I flew out to New York with my wife. His family wasn't able to be there, so I was, like, the only person in attendance who got to see it, or the only person in his circle that got to see it in person. And it was a 4-hour rain delay, and DeGrom started and came back after the rain delay. And then out of nowhere, I think, the eighth inning, they put in Seth, and it was like, good God. And, he hit 96. And his first three batters of his career, he had to face Hayward, Rizzo, and Chris Bryant. So, like, welcome to the big leagues.
Yeah.
And two scoreless, two strikeouts, and the filthy strikeout on Rizzo, which, according to the Sporting News, Seth had the second most RPMs on his curveball in the major league of the season, with, you know, the average being 2,400, and his pitch was 3,500 on Rizzo, and it actually hit Rizzo, and he still swung at it and missed.
Wow.
Because it was raining, he also slipped, and he hit a guy, so he's, like, I think the first player ever to have a balk, or the first guy in years a balk, and it hits batsman in his major league debut in, like, years.
That's got to be. Where's the play index from Baseball Prospectus or whatever? Where do we, when we need it, right?
Yeah, I know. So it was an interesting game. And then after the game, I got to see him. There were no fans waiting because, like I said, the rain delay. And there were like two or three fans, but there was no crowd. And came over and signed for the two people that were the two groups of people that were waiting. Took a picture with me, and the next day he got sent back down, and it was like, well, that was fast. And we went back to Vegas, and we were expecting him to be there not too long, and then Harvey had gotten hurt, and they decided to call up Seth again, and it looks like he's going to be there a little bit this time.
Yeah, what's going on in the water with the New York Mets and their farm system? It seems like every pitcher they've got besides Seth is hurt. Harvey, Thor, Mats, Winoa, a bunch of guys at the AAA. I mean, what is going on?
I don't know. And Seth stayed healthy. I mean, he got very lucky. And what's interesting about him is because of the kind of pitcher he is, his curveball doesn't spin nearly as well in Vegas at the elevation compared to what it was in New York. So he probably got a shot to be more effective in the big leagues than he was in AAA. But I know as a reliever, he was dominant down in AAA. He was just struggling a little bit as a starter.
And it's been pretty cool, the rise, kind of, we've been doing this podcast and kind of watching and talking about Seth as well. It was pretty cool to see him have his first start and then, you know, obviously strike out Rizzo and knowing the backstory. Is he going to be, do you think he's a reliever long term? You think he's a starter? What do you think?
No, I think for most teams he'd be a starter. I just, you know, he happens to play for the Mets, so he gets to be a long guy.
Yeah. Well, like I said, maybe injuries open a spot for him, you know, to start longer term.
Yeah, I don't wish that. I don't wish that on anyone. But I know Verrett's starting tomorrow, and I thought Seth might have a chance to get that start. But I guess they're going with the experience, and that's fine. But I think Seth will get his shot to have a start here or there. And you know, I mean, it was incredible watching him in the major leagues. It was like yesterday I signed him in St. Lucie.
Amazing. I got to ask you about Jeremy Jeffress, who's become, I don't know, if he's not the best closer in baseball right now, he's certainly in the top, you know, you can count him on one hand. Didn't make the All-Star game, a little disappointing, but I almost want you to just brag about Jeremy a little bit.
he's really, he's doing well. I think he has 24 saves now, and I mean, he's almost on pace for 50 on the Brewers, which was not expected before the season, and they're playing well, but they're also retooling at the same time. And Jeremy looks great. I mean, I think had three straight saves against the Nationals. And he's really been effective and embraced in the closer role. And he hasn't looked back since spring training.
I mean, I wish he got more pub for what a great story he is, because it's just phenomenal right now. Maybe if he was playing in New York or a bigger market, he would get more press. But, I mean, the journey he's taken to become, like I said, one of the best relievers in baseball is just absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it was a long, long ride. And, you know, it's a struggle or a battle. That's a better word. A battle every day to make sure the ship is on still, you know, on track. And, you know, I'm happy for him and I'm proud of him. And, you know, remember I first scouted him when he was a sophomore in high school, and this was over a decade for me that I've been watching the good and the bad. So I've been there for pretty much all of it except the draft. And it's been the roller coaster, and now we're at the good part, thank God.
By the way, you should have been a scout rather than an agent. I'm just kind of thinking that off the top of my head.
Probably. I just couldn't stomach finding the next great player and then not getting paid off of it.
And that kind of makes – I do kind of get that, yeah. That makes a lot of sense. So
that would upset me greatly if I found, you know, Albert Pujols and then – I mean, the scout who found Albert Pujols got fired 2 years after they drafted Albert Pujols.
Just amazing, right? Love that loyalty.
A lot of volatility in this business.
Now, how do I ask this? If Jeremy doesn't get invited to the All-Star game, you know, an injury replacement or somehow in the next couple of days, what do Jeremy and the players do, you know, during their All-Star break? Do most of them go home? Do they go, you know, to a resort and kick back? What do you
I think most of them just stay at home. I mean, at least with my clients, traditionally have just gone home or, you know, mini vacation, nothing crazy. So, I mean, just guys take time to unwind and try to get gear up for the second half of the season and the trade deadline and all that good stuff.
Yeah, the All-Star break is almost not long enough, but it's not – I don't know how I'm trying to word this, but it's not long enough for them to really take a full vacation, but it's not short enough for them to, like, do nothing. It's kind of in that in-between zone.
That's why Vegas usually works out pretty well.
Ah, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yep. So And that also kind of gives me a pretty decent segue into I wanted to mention you had a column up a few weeks ago about poaching kind of in the agency business.
Yes.
I wonder where – and I don't – once again, I'm doing a poor job this week of asking you the questions. But I wanted to get kind of your perspective on where is that line of it's okay to be talking to somebody or trying to get that player versus stealing them from another agent.
I mean, you can always talk to people. I mean, there are guys that I don't work for that I've had relationships with for years, and, you know, even if they never hire me, that's fine, but you never know, and, you know, there's really not an ulterior motive, but I mean, it's tricky, you know, and the one situation, it was a guy that I knew first, basically, before his agent did, and I didn't get hired, and things didn't go well at the agency, in his opinion, and I'm sure they thought they were doing a good job, and the player just wasn't happy, and, you know, that's how he felt, and that's his right, and he just called me up and asked if I was still interested, met with him, and got hired, and it was tricky because I actually really liked his agent, so that was tough, but given that, you know, my relationship, you know, with the player goes back to when he was an amateur, that kind of superseded my desire to keep somebody else happy.
And can you give us an idea of how cutthroat this business is? I mean, I feel like
it's pretty terrible.
I mean, is it the stuff? Well, I can get you. You know, I'll charge you 4% on this rather than 4.25%. And
you got to charge all your players the same. I mean, basically, every player gets charged the same if they're with an agency or they're supposed to, because if you have a sliding scale, which is allowed, you have to report it to all your clients. So if I charge Lugo 5% and I charge Jeffress 3%, and I told Lugo that Jeremy's getting a discount, I'm pretty sure I get fired.
Right. And so that's not the way that poaching occurs, because I would think, I mean, in so many businesses,
I mean,
you
that
just
does
try to
happen at the higher levels, I imagine. It has not really happened to me that I know of.
So then let me, so if it's not that way of poaching, how does the poaching happen? Is it your guys not doing
it? I mean, they just sit, watch players for as long as it takes, promise them what they can get them, and they'll do a better job and all that good stuff. And if the player listens, your job is in peril. If you're not doing a good job and the player doesn't listen, then you're in good shape. So, I mean, it's terrible, man. I mean, I've gotten guys before. I signed, I think, 5 players this year, and only one of them had an agent. So I try to avoid it at all costs, but you also, at the same time, I don't have too many agents that I'm friends with, because it really limits your options on what you can do work-wise.
Yeah, and you guys, this isn't like a business where you guys can work together. It's, I've got one agent. You know, there's not, you know, I always go back to the financial advisor side, because I know that a little bit. Like, you can have a couple of financial guys. You know, you can have this guy and that guy, but in your business, you got one guy that, or gal. I mean, that's it.
Oh yeah, it's there's some collaborations that I guess happen. I mean, Randy Johnson had 2 agents doing 2 separate things, and I know JD Martinez's agent does his contract work, and another agency does his marketing. But you know, for the most part, you have one guy, so it's brutal, man. There's a finite amount of players, and we're all trying to get the same guys.
Yeah, it's really crazy. It's just amazing to me how tough that business is. How many agents are actually out there nowadays?
Thousands. I mean, there's only like 250 certified ones by the union, but there's tons of uncertified agencies, and I don't know how kids could, you know, pick an agent in this kind of environment. I've said this time and again, they should only be hiring certified agents, but I mean, there was one horror story on draft day this year. There was a 7th rounder I talked to after the draft, and I was representing his friend, and you know, not a drafted, a professional guy. His friend got drafted in the 7th round, and he said he hired an agent that does NFL work, and he's their first baseball client, and they're charging him 7% on his draft bonus, but he doesn't have to pay it until he gets on the 40-man, which is a ridiculous cycle of circumstances to get paid in, because maybe that works in the NFL, but that is totally not allowed in baseball.
And the odds of a 7th rounder making the 40-man is, you know, 10%.
But you can't make a contract contingent on making the roster. The union would never approve that.
That's another good point, yeah.
And if you're charging 7%, you don't know what the hell you're doing. And if you do know what the hell you're doing, you're ripping people off. I mean, I would try to believe that the company just doesn't know what they're doing, which lends itself to a whole other bunch of questions with, like, why are they in business and why do they have a 7th rounder?
And that, you make a great point, because in the NFL, most of the draft picks make the roster, so you could understand why that might be contingent. But on the other hand, in baseball, like I said, maybe it's 10% chance that you make the 40-man, even if you're drafting the 1st round. I mean, it's tough.
I can't even fathom why that would be a good idea. It's like, you know, getting paid when guys – I mean,
And then why would they want to
wait? I mean, I've represented hundreds of players in my career, and I've had, what, 25, 30, 40-man guys out of those hundreds, and my percentage is on the high end.
And why would you want to wait 3, 4, 5, 6 years to get paid on the bonus?
I mean, it's ridiculous. Plus, not to mention the fact the kid could spend all the money and it would be gone. So just when I heard that, I said what I always say when I hear a bad situation. You don't need to hire me, but you should probably fire them.
Well, how does, because I've heard before that the NFL is really tough on agents and keeping it, you know, a very tight circle. Why is baseball allowing so many thousands of uncertified agents to even work?
Well, they're not allowing it. I mean, they're just, it's not in their grasp because they can't, they don't govern the minor leagues. The PA does not govern what goes on for non-roster guys. So there's really nothing they can do to prevent that. They can bar those people if they don't have a 40-man guy and they're not certified, or, you know, they haven't applied for certification. It bars them from getting in on the major league side, but on the minor league side, there really isn't a lot people can do, and certainly not on the amateur side.
Do you think, and this is totally off the script, but do you think Major League Baseball will ever try to take over the minor league system?
I doubt it, but I haven't really thought about it.
I mean, because it would seem like there would be some positives, but, like, just off the top of my head, it would also seem like just a huge undertaking and a lot of liability and a lot of other headaches that they would want to take on as well.
I can't see them wanting to do that. I mean, maybe if it was cost effective, but I don't see why either side would want to do that with the way everything's going right now. But the lawsuits out there now for the equal pay for minor league guys, and that's tricky. I mean, I don't disagree with it, but it's going to be tricky to do anything about it.
Yeah, where does that? I'm sure many people that are listening to this have heard of that, but I'd love to hear your take on the minor leaguers, their pay. It just seems to me like, I mean, I understand these guys are chasing their dream and you got to have a little bit of an apprenticeship type thing, but I mean, these guys are making no money in the minor leagues.
I had one guy in the GCL 2 years ago make $950 a month before taxes.
I mean, you can't live on that, not even close.
No, not remotely at all. And I think that's crazy. And they're considered part-time employees. They only get paid 5 months out of the year if they're not on the 40-man. They don't have any union protections. It's a broken system. But, you know, baseball has the antitrust exemption, so they can do what they want. And it's worked for them for years. And I don't think the lawsuits are going to be successful. I don't know if they've been decided on yet, but it's just going to be such a hard sell. And I wish some of it would change. And the crazy straw man arguments that I keep hearing from politicians that would bankrupt local economies when it's the major league clubs that are paying the salaries.
Yeah, well, you know those politicians have absolutely no clue except for saying yes to stadiums and everything else.
It's not the minor league team paying the players. It's the major league team paying the players. So it's ridiculous. I mean, it's a drop in the bucket to raise their money. And I know current major leaguers that I even represent that said they'd be willing to personally, you know, roll back whatever league minimum is to give back to the minor leaguers because they knew how it was. And that's how some guys feel. Some guys feel the opposite. But, it's tricky for sure.
Well, and how many guys are just quitting to get out of the game that could potentially stay in if they were making some kind of a living wage? I mean, that to me is crazy as well.
There's tons of players I know who quit because they couldn't afford it. It's crazy. It's really bad. And it's why an agent comes into play sometimes is they can help offset that with endorsements and taking care of some equipment. But it's still a very tough road.
Yeah, and it's just and you touched on it, and I do think it bears repeating though is, I think so many people that go to minor league games or think about the minor leagues think that, you know, that team actually has some control over what's going on the field and with the players and everything else. The major league team is pulling all the strings there, every single thing.
Yeah.
I mean, except
the minor league team has nothing to do with any of the player development stuff at all. So, I mean, it's you know, the minor league team runs the events and runs the stadium, and the majority of them do a really, really good job, but, you know, player development stuff and baseball stuff has nothing to do with the local team.
Yeah, they don't have any part in which players get put there, who gets called up, who's starting, who's playing. I too often I think people think that they have some control over what's going on, and they have zero.
sure.
So, well, I've gone through my list of topics right so far. What else do we need to cover? What are you up to the next few weeks? I know you're at the Futures game. Depending on when people are listening to this.
Yeah, going to the Futures game and maybe the All-Star game. We'll see. Oh my God, I didn't bring it up. I am totally going to the celebrity softball game after the Futures game. Do you know who's playing in it?
Oh, no, but
Mark Paul Gosselaar.
Oh crap! No way.
Yeah, that's totally going to happen.
Oh, you've got to get the pick, and we got to get him on the show. We still got to get Belding too.
It's going to happen. I'm going to have my credentials, and I will be on the field. For the Futures game, I believe, and I've gone before. I got to hang out when I was single. I hung out with Marissa Miller, who was married, which totally sucked for single me. But no, I've gone to them before, and yeah, I saw that Mark Paul Gosselaar was on, and I'm like, oh my God, that's so happening.
Zach Morris, for everybody that hadn't figured it out, yeah, that is.
Yeah,
you have to get.
Yeah,
the picture.
I forgot to tell you that.
Oh, wow. I'm so jealous. That is amazing. You've got to get that picture.
Yeah, and I know there are people that are way more famous than him in the game, and I think I've now blocked them all out. I don't even remember who's playing in it.
That's the only one that matters. That show that he had, Franklin and Bash, was phenomenal, too, recently. That got canceled, but that was a great show.
One of my favorite underrated comedies is, oh, my God, what was the college movie he did?
Dead Man on Campus?
Dead Man on Campus is one of my favorite. I watched it the day I got to college and the day I left college. It was one of my favorite college movies ever.
I was talking about that with my wife the other day, that movie. And I was blanking on the name, so that's the only reason it came to me. But that movie
Nobody
is
Nobody remembers
awesome.
That movie or watches it, and it's great.
And he was supposed to be a plumber if he failed out of school.
I really liked that movie. I thought everybody in it was terrific, and I like that movie.
The depressed singer that they moved in.
I've been saddened, however, by the movies that I've seen lately. I saw the Marvel movie. I saw the Captain America Civil War. I saw X-Men. And then, like, the coup de grace, my wife and I saw Independence Day, fell asleep halfway through, and then left.
I've heard horrible things about Independence Day. That's gotten everybody I've talked to has crushed that movie.
I legit fell asleep halfway through the movie.
Wow.
It was so bad.
I didn't even think you slept.
X-Men was disappointing. Well, X-Men was disappointing, but not unwatchable. I didn't like Civil War. I mean, most people did, but I didn't like it. Much like I did not like the new Jurassic Park movie. But yeah, the Independence Day, you really, like, you wouldn't think this, but, like, totally, without Will Smith, the movie's worthless.
Wow, that's saying something. That's saying a lot.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to being let down by the Suicide Squad movie and crossing my fingers Rogue One doesn't suck.
Well, I can give a plug for Finding Dory. That was pretty good.
Yeah, I heard it was good. I got to go see that. I'm also looking forward to the Pixar movie about the secret or talking pets or whatever. Louis C.K. is in that. So it's like, Louis C.K. was on Jeopardy like a month ago. Did you see that?
No. He was on Jeopardy?
He won, which, spoiler alert, we might want to cut that out, but he freaking won.
No way.
He won 50 grand for some charity that he was taking, that he was, trying to raise money for. And
Celebrity Jeopardy. I thought you just meant, like, he, showed up.
No, but it was like political Jeopardy. So he was against the CNN anchor and MSNBC anchor, and he obliterated them.
Did he? I mean, he's smart as can be, and you got to be that quick, but that's interesting to me. I wouldn't have picked him as a Jeopardy guy necessarily.
Yeah, also for non-radio show part.
All right, Josh. Well, I think that's maybe we'll cut it there for the week. Hopefully we'll have you back on soon. And Mark Paul, we got to have Zach on the show.
Yeah, I got to try to set that up. I still need to give you Belding's email address. I still have Dennis Haskins. Email address.
I'm not sure I could.
I got to send you that for a request.
I'm not sure I could handle that, having that piece of information in my, possession.
I almost couldn't handle it at the winter meetings where I need to be at my best, and I cleaned it up after about 5 minutes, but there's a 5 minute window where it's like, all right, screw this, I'm not working.
I mean, because if he actually wrote me back, how am I not showing people that Dennis Haskins sent me an email? It's impossible.
Well, I even showed him the test. I showed everybody the test email he sent me. It's like, did you get my email? Here's my address. It's like, look, I got a test email from him.
Oh, so jealous.
Well, did you see the exchange? did you see the exchange I had on Twitter a week ago? Like, did you follow me? It was Cato Kalin.
I saw that. How is Cato following you?
The hell was that? Like, Cato's sending free gear to a bunch of my clients. Like, he's got some sports apparel wear company he works for or works with, and they're sending a bunch of gear to, like, all my guys, and it's like, what the... Cato's a Brewers fan? This is not registering with me.
How? First of all, how is Cato Kalin, A, still alive, but we don't need to go into that, B, and two, he's in the sports apparel business now?
I guess, or he's working with one, but, you know, I was talking to a few sports writers that I am definitely, like, king of the D-list amongst agents.
That is amazing.
Random D-list celebrities do I run into compared to the normal person?
I mean, I've never heard of somebody running into more, and it's the randomness of the people you run into, too.
Hank Azaria, Colin Quinn, John Butchergrass, CeeLo, Mr. Belding. I mean, it's like, this is a weird group.
Well, and now Mark Paul's going to be in there, too, which is...
Oh, that's definitely happening. It's like, even though my wife and I got a little dumbest argument, like, 2 years ago, we went to the very first Oddball Comedy Festival, which I overpaid for, but I had to see it once in my lifetime, and it was a show that had Aziz Ansari, Louis C.K., Mark Maron, Hannibal Buress. It was like a vacuum of every one of my favorite comics in one place. And I wanted to meet Mark Maron, who I knew was staying at the Hard Rock because it was the only hotel within 20 miles of where we were. So I told her, I'm like, let's just go to the Hard Rock and I'll meet Maron. And we argued literally for 2 hours, like divorce-worthy argument that she would not let me wait for Mark Maron.
Come on.
Like, my marriage almost ended because I couldn't meet Mark Maron. Who tweeted me that night. I actually put in an interview request with his agent with my baseball prospectus credentials, and they denied my interview. So I tweeted at him after the show, like, man, that was awesome. Sorry, Olivia would not let me interview you. And he's like, yeah, thanks for coming to the show. Sorry. Like, Maron tweeted me.
See, I could have met him.
It's like, Maron tweeted right at me right after the show. Damn it. And, God, what was the other one? When David Spade retweeted me, when I said that, I didn't even know how he saw it, but I had tweeted, I was like, when the Mission Impossible trailer came out, it's like, you know, I really like the new Mission Impossible, you know, 4 trailer, but I liked it better the first time when it was Black Chief. And Spade saw it and retweeted it. I'm like, what the hell?
That is a good joke, though, because it's 100% true.
Yeah, I occasionally have my joke moments.
Well, Josh, I think that's a perfect place for us to end for the week. So
yep.
Where can people can find you on Twitter, at Joshua Kuznick?
Yeah, I'm at Joshua Kuznick. I'm still writing at BP. So if anyone wants to comment on any of the articles, I enjoy the interaction. And my email address is my name, and I'm, you know, mostly on Twitter and don't use Facebook. And I tried to set up a Snapchat, which I am now officially old because I'm having trouble understanding what the hell it's for.
I had to ask my 19-year-old niece yesterday why I would have a Snapchat account, and she looked at me like,
I don't have any reason to have one. I think my only video will remain to be I'm at Seth Lugo's first major league game.
Yeah, I think that works. Yeah, because she just looked at me like I had 3 heads, and I was like, okay, I'm old. Like, I'm done. Okay,
yep.
Great.
I don't get Snapchat. I don't get any of those. So, you know, I'm going to stick with Facebook and Twitter because I remember when they were invented. So I'm going to stick with them.
Yeah, I mean, it's gotten you, you know, a follower in Cato Kalin. How could you not? So,
I know. It's amazing. I've got John Butchergrass and Cato Kalin.
Wow. There's a list, so... All right.
Well, we'll talk next week, hopefully, after the Futures game.
Yeah, definitely. And good luck through the All-Star break.
All right. Thank you very much. I'll talk to you this week.
Thanks, man. And that was episode 13 of the Joshua Kuznick Experience. Thanks to Josh for joining me. That was a lot of fun just catching up on several of the topics that I had that I wanted to get for him to, you know, give his take on. And I'll apologize to the audience. I feel like I was a little off today on my interviewing skills and my questions. So I'm glad you bared with me if you made it through. So thank you much. We will be back soon. Bye for now.